In the studio, Marie Harworth here. Morning, Marie.
Morning, Aaron.
Grab the microphone. Start. Get off your phone. Come on.
Sorry. Thought you were going to do the news.
You're way too... No, we did that.
Oh, no, I wasn't listening.
That was the thing where I blasted the audience after the news. Okay. Folks, apologies for that. The people sending the news, because we don't do it ourselves now. I sent a very quiet file and I turned the mixing desk right up. And then when it stopped, the normal level stuff came on. It was very loud.
Sorry.
Anyway, you don't have to... That's not your fault. Oh, no, I was blaming you, wasn't I? Because I was distracted by talking to you. Anyway, Marie is a local counsellor therapist. She comes in every couple of weeks. We have a chat. And today we want to talk about solo parenting.
Yes.
It's on Marie's mind. And this is a thing that you have personal experience of, so you can speak both as a counsellor and from the other side of the counsellor's couch.
Well, that was a long time ago, but
long
yes,
time ago.
I don't think it's changed much, Aaron.
No, it hasn't. And I just want to give, before we get started, I just want to give the... I guess it's the political background to the discussion we're going to be having. Ruth Richardson, bless her soul, when she was finance minister in 92, completely changed the benefits system. And she based it on some research that was done at Otago University, where someone had worked out what's the minimum that people could live on and set up four different gradations of it. And the bottom one was, she called basic, this researcher. And it was 80% of, no, sorry, so that was basic, and it relied on making a lot of your own food to do it cheaply, and in the end they actually withdrew it as a viable option. They thought it wasn't really viable. Anyway, Ruth Richardson and the Treasury workers set the benefits at 80% below this basic level. So they deliberately made it at a level where you would not get enough money to adequately feed your family, to give them adequate nutrition, basically. That's what this study was about. So that's where they aimed it. And they say that's to provide motivation for people to work. That's based on a belief that is a matter of prejudice. It's not held up by research. Mm. They've done experiments where they get communities and they give them a guaranteed minimum wage. And then they watch to see what happens. And it's not the case that people all immediately take advantage and go on the benefit. People who have have had kids take time to get through that early age with the baby. And people who've had something rough happen in their life take the chance to get their life back together. Mm-hmm. And then people want to be doing interesting things with their lives. So yeah. The research has shown that they go out and work. Yep. So... there's a lot of prejudice out there around this topic. I'm trying to bring some facts to it. I know a lot of people, well, probably the people who don't like hearing those facts are not listening to this show. I think that's fairly common. But anyway, Marie from... So that's that picture from over there on the political side of things. Marie at the coalface, what's happening for primarily women, but a few guys who are solo dadding. What are you seeing?
Yeah, so I guess it's the same. The narrative hasn't changed, Aaron, from the time I was a solo parent probably to where people are now. I guess for me, you know, I came through being a solo parent and all the stigma attached to it. I was young. I didn't understand the stigma attached. I just knew it was there and could tangibly feel that in society. Now on this other end of it, perhaps working with others that are solo parenting, what I'm seeing, is the burnout that comes from taking the responsibility of being a parent for the last 17 years of a child's life, and then coming to the end of that, the end of the benefit, the end of your child being at school, and now what? So I'm seeing the other end of this difficult area of parenting alone and the repercussions of the parent who has been working double time, pretty much. They've been working in overdrive for, like I say, the last 17, 18 years, 15, 14 years, whatever it might be.
I've got to say, I don't have the same spring in my step that I had before I had kids.
Hmm.
And I, you know, we did it as a partnership in our family. We didn't have to do it solo.
I think it's, we really do need to come back to being more vocal around our parenting and our children and who... we are in relationship with and being responsible for that, which, I mean, it sounds like a adult thing to do, doesn't it, to be responsible for our parenting. And obviously we're not. We have children outside of partnerships and relationships that are going to be long-term, and people move on, and then they go and have children with other people. And it's this lack of looking back and going, well, what about my family that I did start, or what about these children that I do have, and the responsibility towards that, instead of going on and making more children
so
with others.
Are you pointing the finger at somebody here?
Where am I pointing the finger? The trouble with pointing the finger is that, you know, when we point outwards, there's three other fingers pointing inwards to ourself. And so this is about an adjustment within our own ability to mature and make responsible decisions. But, you know, who does that in the heat of the moment? And then we, you know, we have children and somebody's responsible for that, okay? Somebody is responsible for that beautiful child that's been brought into this world. And often it's the mother.
Mm. The dad disappears is what you're saying.
Dad disappears. Commonly. Commonly, and, you know, people, I guess, males who are solo parenting, we'll be up in arms hearing that, but the reality is that,
well, they don't need to be. I mean, it's most, everyone knows it's mostly men who disappear, and sometimes women.
Yeah. Women, but mostly men who are leaving relationships or do not want to do the hard yards when the rubber hits the road. So when the honeymoon period's over, and we actually have to learn to work with each other and live with each other, when that starts to happen, things fall apart, and so the tenacity or the ability to do,
or the skills.
I
think they're lacking the skills, and I don't know. I mean, these are people who, guys who leave are people who aren't coping.
Yeah.
Partners who leave are people who aren't coping with the situation and don't know what to do about that.
Yeah, and it's a hard road when you're dealing with your own past trauma and then trying to do a relationship and trying to do babies. You need a wraparound service to support you with skills and tools that will come alongside you as you grow in that area.
And that's not something our culture does. Our young parents are the most stressed out people in our culture as a group. we had support. We had grandparents in Hamilton. Mm. You know, which was actually great with little kids, babies, you'd drive to Hamilton and you had a base to work from there.
Yeah.
So we had lots of support, but my God, it was hard work.
Absolutely.
For quite a while. I don't know how, I think about doing it solo, I don't know how that would be done, but clearly it is.
Well, you ask a solo parent, and they'll tell you their story, and it's not going to be one that is full of sunshine and happiness, because it's difficult, it's hard, and you've got to be committed and you've got to be structured, and you know, you're either committing yourself to parenting and doing that, or you're dealing with the trauma in your life and you're trying to parent the best you know how. So you know, you can have different looks of solo parents. You've got women who are solo parents because their partner has passed on.
Yes.
You know, and so now they're in this area of being a solo parent. It's an area they've never looked at or known about, and yet the stigma will be upon them just as much as it is with the woman who has two or three children to different men. And the stigma is upon them, you know. But where's the males? Well, let's not talk about the ones that are passed on, because, I mean, that's just
natural. We know
where
they are. Yeah. Yeah.
But where's these other ones who, are disappearing from the family unit and leaving these children to be brought up in a single parent.
But we've been saying, where's the males, for decades, and they're still disappearing. Like, they obviously need help.
I think we all need help.
The solo mum needs help, but prior to that, obviously the guy needed help too. Or the rare occasion when it's the mother who leaves and isn't coping.
Yeah, because we're all looking for a relationship. That's why we do these things. We're looking to be in relationship with somebody. Unfortunately, we don't have the skill set to do these days to do those long-term relationships. How do we do long-term? What do I do when things get difficult. What do I do when our cash is stressing us out, or we can't find the
home? Is the thing. I always want to bring it back to, I don't want to just put it on the individuals, because we've created a situation, like I said at the start, where people don't have enough money to survive.
No.
And I know from personal experience that when the money's tight, I'm more stressed and the family's more stressed.
Mm.
So we are knowingly, if we want to be conscious of it, as a nation, we are knowingly putting people under immense stress.
We are.
And certainly their only solution is to improve their individual skills. Yeah. That's the only thing that they're going to be able to do to get it sorted. But we really need to have a bit of a look at ourselves.
Yeah, we do.
To put people on a wage that's 80% of the bare minimum, and then, this is a thing I've talked about as well before, deliberately ensure that there is an unemployment rate of about 5% to keep a downward pressure on wages. Like, this is something that's been in the media. I've talked about this before. It's acknowledged occasionally, but not very often.
Mm.
And no one really makes that connection. But I keep saying it. Who are we as a nation to punish people for being unemployed and then ensure that 5% of our workforce is unemployed all the time? Like, that's a little bit on the sick end of the spectrum. But anyway, having said all that, individual skills is the only way out of it for people. You know,
I want to go back to that word that you used, punish, because I think that has been the main word that I would use when it comes to benefits and being a solo parent. You are punished. I mean, people think, oh, we're giving you a handout. I mean, really? I mean, you're giving somebody a handout in a situation where they've been left with a life to have to bring up on their own, and we feel we're giving them a handout. We've got the wrong concept. The idea around being a solo parent has been kind of drilled into us right from the beginning that, you know, they're usually drinkers and on drugs and, you know, promiscuous and have no sense of direction in their life. You know, this has been put on us in regards to what solo parents look like. That's certainly how it felt like for me growing my children up under that umbrella. It was not an easy road or pleasant road.
What sort of things, like, when people discovered that was your position in life, what sort of reactions were you getting? Do you remember?
I think it was always kind of a looking down on, you know, whether that was perceived by me, but I never felt like it was a coming into. I always felt like the third wheel, Aaron, you know, in the relationship. So it doesn't matter how honest you are or how, you know, non-threatening you are when it comes to trying to engage with others, they see you as a threat because you're the third wheel.
Oh, I see. Right, as a single
parent.
Woman.
Yeah, you're available. There's nobody around your home.
That was something I hadn't anticipated, actually. So, yeah.
Mm, and so, yeah, you do get kind of tagged as you get known in the community that you live in. Lots of solo parent women can be tagged.
What do you mean?
In regards to knowing that they're solo parents.
You don't mean
they're available.
You don't mean tagging on your fence?
No. Oh, our English language.
Yeah.
That they're available. And, yeah, it's disheartening, actually, how we treat women who are bringing up a good portion of our society on their own, no thanks to the male who's running around out there doing what? I don't know.
But see, in your situation, you're the father of your first child didn't leave. You had to leave because of the appalling situation that he was creating in your life, which took a lot of. Yeah, I mean that took a lot of something from inside you.
Well, strength, tenacity, or the knowledge of knowing that the life I was going to do was going to be no good for me. You know, you can't keep going down that track.
I mean, it's already a stress.
Lying to yourself.
It's already a stress. But people do.
Well, they do because something within me was strong enough to see over and beyond that. But you're right. I stepped out of that relationship. It's not like the father left me. I stepped out of the relationship because it was an unhealthy relationship to be bringing a child up in. And so I made that choice. But okay, so what if I'd stayed with the dad and I had carried on in that relationship, and maybe I would have become quite aggressive too, being in that environment over a long term.
We should say for people it was a violent environment.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
So now what sort of child would I have been, how would I have been bringing my child up in that environment? You know, what would I have ended up with at the end in regards to the person I produced in my daughter? And now I look at my girl and she's an incredible human being.
She is. I know her, folks. She is. She's awesome, eh? I don't know that well, but I met her when she was like 16 or something.
She's an incredible shining star, that one. But would she have survived like that if I had brought her up in that environment? I doubt that very much. So, you know, we make the choices we make and we still get condemned and struggle, and you get the stigma is attached to you that you're a solo parent, and yeah, it's a very uncomfortable place to be in because you can't tell your story. And
I want to recite a situation that was involved when I was involved with the kids' soccer. It was a long time ago, so now people won't know. I'm sure they won't be able to figure out names and things, but we had someone coaching, a solo mum coaching a team. And she had another little one who needed to be looked after during games while she was reffing the game. So we got one of the probably the most stressed member of the parent group for that team to be the coach. And I think I had a discussion on the committee about getting her some petrol vouchers.
Mm.
And there was one person who was kind of against it and was like, well, she should get a job. You know, and I was like, in actual fact, she was getting a degree while raising two small children by herself. Yeah. I have no clues how you do that. I couldn't. I could not do that. I couldn't have done that myself. You know, and then we're asking her for help, and I was kind of confronted with this hatred.
Mm.
I was just like, well, I'll pay her out of my own money then, and I didn't have any money then. But the rest of the committee sided with me. Like, that's a long time ago. Folks, please don't try and guess who's who.
it was me.
But that was just like, because I don't hang out with people who've got that vicious attitude towards people on benefits. I can't stand it because it's hypocrisy. So when I am confronted with it in person, it kind of flips me out a little bit. And it's just a matter of looking at the consequences. Powerless people are easy people to project your hatred onto. That's kind of what I think. But we need a better solution because these powerless people are raising children. And if we want a good society in 20 years' time, we've got to, you know.
Oh, we need to be supporting these families. Yeah. We need to be stepping in the gap and stop waving a stick at them and actually wave some cash at them and make it a lot easier for them because they are bringing up our children and our generation.
And another thing I remember, I've probably talked about this before, that a solo mum was talking about buying some furniture at a shop in Hamilton and the delivery driver cottoning on to the fact that she was single, turning up with cologne on and dressed up a little bit. Like just having to put up with nonsense like that.
Oh yeah, and that is the underbelly that people don't see, and solo parents deal with quite a bit, is that idea that because you have a child, you are now and you're a solo parent, now you're free and you're open to having relationships. And it's I don't know where this has come from, my parents' generation and the idea of the scarlet woman, you know, outside of marriage, and whether this is a toxic thinking coming over and coming through that we haven't dealt with yet, but it needs to go. It really needs to go.
My feeling, and I'm not the expert here, but it's just, again, it comes back to they're a powerless person, and people don't have to hold them. People don't hold themselves to their same behaviour standards in a situation like that.
Mm.
You know,
yeah. Yeah, and I wanted to go back to when you said about that solo parent going and studying. Oh my gosh, how many solo parents are studying? These women are, and the few men.
Because you have to be able to
incredible.
You have to be able to say something to people, I guess, to make it look like you're not just being a sponge on the state.
When my girl was five, I went and did my community and social work certificate. That's all you could do then. There was no degrees or it was a certificate a year. I think it was a 1 or 2 year certificate. I can't remember. And I made sure I got a flat walking distance from WinTech. I had to think about how I was going to, where I was going to drop my girl off so I could go and study, you know, get a daycare close by. So there's nobody informing me or making this happen for me. Everything I have had to do myself, I had to, get myself to all those places, take my daughter with me, and everything is... You're in double time. You're doing everything. Then you still got to go home and do everything that, you know, has to be done at home in regards to cooking and cleaning and preparing meals and whatever.
At least you could get a flat back then.
Yeah, but, you know, the flat I got, I remember it was a terrible flat. You could hear through the walls. You know, there was people would have parties and... didn't feel safe, and I hated living in the flats. I really didn't like it, Aaron. With a young child, it was convenient for me, so I could go to WinTech, so I could get to study and get Jess to
daycare.
Yeah. It was just to make it easy for me. But that is not a place I wanted to bring my daughter up. There was no outside for her to play in. There were drunks coming home at night. It wasn't a pleasant environment. No, I didn't. No. At least I had a flat. Man, I would have liked a house with some people in it. That, you know, it was nice to come home to.
Well, it came in the end.
Yeah, but what I'm... Yeah, and it did. But it came because I had the tenacity to keep moving forward. And not all of us have that. And it's difficult to... When you're not in the best place yourself... to think about your future and how am I going to survive bringing a child up. And so you do have to think about the other things you need to take on.
Did you know other people? Did you have like a friend, network, support, anything going on at that time?
Nothing, Aaron.
Nothing. And how many solo parents are in that situation, do you think?
So I did end up moving in with another solo parent. At that time, which was did end up in a house, which was lovely, and she had a young daughter, and that was great. But how many did I didn't know many because I didn't go out. You know, my social life was non-existent. I went to WinTech, and in my social work, oddly enough, when I think back, I blitzed it. It was an area that I did really, really well in because it was kind of natural for me to come up with the answers and know what to do. I didn't think it was... Back then, I don't think we had long essays to do. It was more questions and what would you do in this situation. So I found it fascinating, loved it. Didn't find that so easy in my studies as I got older when I did my bachelor's. So, interestingly enough... However, did I meet solo parents on that course? I don't remember that. I remember meeting a whole kind of rainbow of people, I guess, that was fascinating to me because I hadn't been kind of in society with different groups of people. So just even being in that environment was quite enriching for me.
Yeah.
But to make friends, no, because I had a child at home, and who wants to go home and like I've got dinner to prepare, I've got I've got clothes to wash, I've got clothes to hang out, or I've got things to do. I haven't got time to sit down and have a good old natter, and then think about all the things I have to do after that now because all my time's been taken up with talking to you. It just doesn't work like that. You're working in double time. So you're always thinking ahead. You're always thinking of the next thing you have to do and what's, it's constant. So when I look at solo parents now, after all these years, and the ones who have stayed solo parents, and they're now, you know, in their 40s, heading towards their 50s, these people are burning out, and they're tired, and they've been working most of their life to survive, and their kids are growing up, and now leaving. So what are we going to do now with these beautiful women that have given their life to bringing up children? Who's going to look after them now? And that is going to become a problem, I can guarantee it, because there's unwellness when we have to work in double portions for 20-odd years of our life.
Well, you're burning the candle at both ends. Yeah.
And so there now you will get the medical repercussions of that. And not only that, the loneliness when our children do end up leaving home and not, you're still on your own. It's sad. And we honestly, there's this little quote that I wrote down: the world is changed by your example, not by your opinion. So I can talk and talk and talk about this, but it's our example that is going to change us. It's individually going, actually, I'm not going to make somebody else responsible for the part that I played in this as well. And this, I need to be responsible and be responsible in that person's life towards that child that you helped make, you know, and that child will live a full life and they need you in their life. Well, hopefully you're somebody they would want in your life, you know, and even that, being responsible for that, take the responsibility to be somebody who a child would want in their life. You know, this is all about us, Aaron. This isn't about pointing the finger at anybody. This is about pointing the finger at ourselves. Whoever that might be, how we react to something, how we think about it, how we respond to it, how we treat another human being who is doing their very best to bring up a family who they've been left with, by the way. If this was wartime and the men were all taken off in war, we'd be looking at these women like they're heroes. These are the heroes.
I know we do,
home.
And we have that as a nation of people. We have that in us. The reaction to the cyclone is completely compassionate. You know, from around the nation. At the school today, they're doing a fundraiser. Extreme sent. They've got contacts in Wairoa, and they've sent some a truckload of clothes over. So, yeah, people will act compassionately, but there's this block.
There's this block because I think it's a carryover. Like I say, it's toxic thinking that has come from a generation around solo parenting, and you were the woman left.
Yeah.
Scarlet woman left.
Is that left over from that judgmental religious attitude to like the 50s?
It's very well, whatever attitude it is, it's coming from an old place that has no value in the world that we live in, because we are now suffering the repercussions of not doing family, of not staying in. I mean, isn't it funny, eh? The very people that might be... I shouldn't even say that, because I want to say it's probably male voices that are pushing this in regards to how we've viewed solo parents.
There's a lot of political voices. People you make political capital out of this. And that's never helpful.
Wouldn't it be great if we flipped this around and celebrated these women and actually spoke into them and how amazing they are, how incredible they are, and maybe let's and then we could maybe look at, not talk so well about the men who are doing nothing.
Well, I don't think anyone's talking well of the men. I mean, they're not viewed particularly well either.
Viewed in any of this, though. It's just a solo parent, right? And the other part
they might have run off, so
non-existent.
I mean, nobody has any respect for the guy who leaves and runs off
because he can't cope.
Yeah, but he's gone. So
hang on a minute. Let's just stay there for a minute, because nobody knows the man who left, but everyone knows the woman who stayed.
Yeah.
Okay, and just think about that.
So everyone knows
the woman who's the solo parent, but nobody knows the man who left the woman who's the solo parent. He just goes on to another relationship and says, oh, yeah, I've got a couple of kiddies. that's, you know, might, may say that, may not too, or may not even know about the children because they've just like, no, that's not my child. And then it's up to the woman to prove that that is your child. And it's just nasty, nasty
Well, actually,
stuff.
That's important now because the benefit system wants money from the dad if there is a dad.
The benefit system has always wanted money from the dad, Aaron. But look, even when I was back in my day, they never got the money from the dad.
Really? Okay.
No. And isn't that interesting? Like, they did not follow the dad up and hound him to pay child support.
A lot of his income, probably most of his income, wasn't going through the tax department.
Well, actually, or that when he it came out of his tax, it didn't go to the female, it doesn't go to the mother. It'll go through the taxes, or they'll take it some other way, but it's not actually getting into the hand of the person who's bringing up the child. This is all a government thing, like, oh, yes, you pay this because you had a child somewhere. You must be accountable, but it's not coming to the mother. The mother's not getting that money. And they say it's made up in the benefit. Oh, well, because...
But the benefit's not enough, which we've already established.
Never going to be enough.
At the start.
I reckon we should... this would annoy people, wouldn't it? Let's triple the benefit. Let's make them rich. Let's make them give them some money so they not only have money like to bring up their children, but they've got money that they can save or have a life with. Oh, that they're not allowed, by the way, because they have a child.
You're getting annoyed now, Marie.
I'm pretty annoyed about this because the way we have treated our women who are bringing up our children. And they are all of our children because they are in our society and we are going to get the benefits of their how they've been brought up.
there's a purely financial argument that the long-term issues created by stressing out young families, the government's going to pay for those later on. Like you're saying, even when people get to middle age and older age when they've lived an incredibly stressful life, that the health consequences
are going to
be on the tax system.
Out.
So yeah,
we've
so
got, we've got women who are burnt out, who don't. Some are educated, have gone and got themselves educated. Oh my gosh, how incredible! They've not only brought up your children, but they've gone and educated themselves so that they can hopefully have some sense of achievement outside of their parenting.
So last time we had a discussion like this, and someone said to me afterwards, you know, I think they thought we'd been too easy on beneficiaries, and they said, you know, I've got, this guy was telling me I've got family members who have deliberately been dull bludgers. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, yeah, that does happen. But and then I said, how many people on the dole do you think are actually deliberately doing it that way? Mm. And he was like, oh, maybe 1 in 20?
Yeah, there we go.
So there's not – and there are also statistics to show how long people are on a benefit for. So this is not talking about solo mums or solo parents here, but just that over a period of months or a year, most people end up back in work. So the vast majority of people, while there might be 5% unemployment, the vast majority of them do eventually get work at some point. So these are not people who are trying to stay on the benefit. Mm. Like, oh, I accidentally got a job. I didn't mean to. Now I seem to be off the benefit. Right? That's not what happens, right?
I didn't mean to get that at all. Don't
yeah, yeah.
That
I don't know how it happens. Yeah. No, that doesn't happen. So while, yes, there are people doing that, and there probably are people who choose to stay on, choose to keep having kids to stay on that form of income support. I think you've got to be in a pretty bad place to think that's a that's a good option. If that's your best option, where are you?
Yeah, you know, exactly. And so that's what I mean. I think this narrative around solo, just solo parenting. Maybe it's the word. I don't know.
Well, the word has stigma attached now.
There's definitely. That stigma is attached to it, and how do you? It's just cruel, Aaron. I'm going to say it again. The world has changed by your example, not by your opinion. So we can talk and talk and talk, but until the light bulb goes on individually in us, and we go, "I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to discredit these women or the few men that are solo parenting, or if I see people like this, I'm going to support them. How can I support them? How can I, you know, I mean, we're coming into hard times, people. We are. Things aren't going to
We already are. For people, like I know solo parents who need financial help.
To
feed their family, that's not possible. And we discussed the reasons why it's not. It's literally not possible. I know situations in town, not many, because I don't know a lot of solo parents, because they're kind of invisible in a lot of ways.
Yeah, because they don't go out because they're too busy at home.
But I know people who are definitely getting financial help. They need it.
Well, everyone needs a life, Aaron, and so
everyone needs food.
Yeah, for us to think that it's okay that these people are struggling to survive because they deserve it in some way, to be struggling, like, this is wrong thinking. People are not on benefits because this is a pleasant way to live, because it's not a pleasant way to live. For some people, yes, it's all they know. But we've got a small proportion of people where that story is the one that we hear, instead of looking at the greater proportion of people who are trying to do life and survive in this benefit world, and they have integrity, they're doing their very best, they are putting everything on the line for this and their children.
I guess I want to keep acknowledging that there are you'll meet people who are on benefits who are unpleasant people, but to assume that everyone is where the logical fallacy is,
because they're the ones with the bigger voices. You know, they're the solo parents who are out there that we are seeing, who may be align with the narrative of. You know, you're staying on a benefit because that suits you. You know,
that's confirmation bias. That's remembering the things that support your bias, your biased view. So
as soon as we hear that, we lump everyone in with that, and that's not a truth. That's not a truth. So if it's not a truth, we can't live by that. We can't use that as an example. The best that we can do is love over and beyond our own judgments. And just love out of a place of knowing that person is struggling, and this is a difficult. They're on their own. What can I do? How can I support in some way, even if it's just encouragement, saying hello,
just acknowledging them, that they exist and that they're a person.
Yeah, or the right to exist. If you can afford it, and they're going through the supermarket, and you think you can pay for their trolley, then pay for it. You know, do something nice.
Some people might turn that down, I imagine.
Yeah, but they may. But I tell you what, underneath, they're certainly because they're not used to people giving.
Yeah.
But I would encourage people to accept that. Accept the giving. Don't say no. Accept it and feel the love. You know, that's a nourishing place to be. Or if you're a gardener and you know you've got excess fruit and veggies, and there's a solo parent and you know is struggling, got a few kids, or go and drop some food off for them.
That's the easiest thing for people to accept. The stuff that you've grown yourself and you didn't have to pay any cash for. People always accept that.
You know what? Or if you know somebody and you don't want them to know that you're caring for them, or, you know, put a little card in their mailbox of, I think you're a champion. You're doing an amazing job, and I see you. You're awesome. Mm. You know, just something, because what I remember is there was nothing, Aaron. Mm. It was a day-to-day slog. It was a day-to-day having to do all the time and be responsible and accountable for everything, and that's hard work. Because half of us are still kids when we're having kids, and we're trying our best to be adult in this world.
Well, I was 30 and I wasn't ready.
You're never ready at the beginning.
You're never ready for that. You're
never ready. You don't know. It's not a puppy. Yeah.
No.
And it's a lifetime commitment. And when as a solo parent, I think that's... When that hit home for me life changed for me. It was, I kind of just had this, one day I realised this was a lifetime commitment. There's no, I can't get away from this.
I've never asked the question, but I presume it wasn't in the plan to have a child when you did.
No, but I was 25 when I had Jess, so I was probably thinking, yeah, I was getting to that stage where I was wanting kids.
Yeah.
So, no, definitely not planned, though. No.
Yeah.
Not in a relationship that I was looking at. You know, back then, I wouldn't even, I mean, Aaron, I didn't even think I was going to get past 25, like, hit 30.
You didn't think you'd live that long?
No, for a short term. Short-term lifespan.
Was that because you just weren't looking that far ahead, or were you convinced that everything was so wrong in your life and with you that you weren't going to live?
Yeah, I think it was more that I was convinced that everything was so wrong in my life. There was no way I was going to get anywhere past, well, definitely not past 30. Gosh.
So
I didn't have any thoughts.
What was your self-esteem levels like in those days?
I would have been like a street person. That would have been my self-esteem. Would have been like, I don't exist in this world. Like, people don't see me.
You're not.
I could walk down the street and I would not be. I'm an unknown. I'm an unknown person.
So very low self-esteem.
Very low. Very lonely. Very lonely. It's a one feeling I don't think that I will ever not know is that sense of loneliness in a world where there's so many people, and that sense of being alone. That's not what we want for people.
So when you've got low self-esteem and not much hope for the future, you don't plan for the future, do you?
Well, you everything becomes more simplified. Like, you know, I used to collect brass, interestingly enough, so shiny things, like a bit of a magpie. So if I went to a second-hand shop and I saw something beautiful that was made of brass and I could afford to buy that, then I would go home and I'd shine it up. I mean, this sounds really sad and ridiculous, but I'd go home and I'd shine that brass up and make it look incredible. So, you know, I had these beautiful, shiny brass things. And for me, it was about taking something. When I look at it now as a counsellor, taking something that was covered up and dirty and did not see its beauty and take it home and make it shine beautifully. That's what I wanted for myself in my own life, and I couldn't make that happen. So my way of making that happen for myself was to get to buy brass objects and shine them up and make them look amazing.
All those signs. Now, last week you came in with that picture of yourself at a wedding with a balloon and you'd painted a very unhappy face on the balloon, or drawn a very, and you were like 14, I think you said.
Yeah.
So signs everywhere looking back.
Signs everywhere looking back. I can see the signs now. And for anyone else out there like me who has been through that life, they too would see the signs. And so, it's probably really important to hear the stories of these people, because it's going to inform us going forward and how we can do it well. So when I say we want to hold in high regard our solo parents, I'm saying that through experience of knowing what that feels like to be in the bottom rung, at the bottom whatever step that is in society where you're not seen.
It just doesn't reflect well on us, I'm afraid. I hate to keep harping on about it. It's like I like to look to positive things for the future, and this is a hard one. I know the current economic settings will eventually change because they keep letting us down, and they let us down during the floods with critical infrastructure run by corporations that wasn't up to the task. Just one example, and logs everywhere.
Yeah, but that's great. So we have an example, right? That's different from a government's example on solo parents. Still a bad example. You know what I mean? Like, we've been doing bad for a long time without taking responsibility. We can either see it in our society with our children, or we can see it from the logs that are coming down from our hills through bad forestry. You know, it hits us in the face sooner or later. We can't get away with it forever.
It's a bit of a tidal wave.
Yep, but it's been seen now.
Lots
of people talked about it. Lots of people said this is gonna go bad.
There would have been people saying this is gonna be a problem.
They were, and now we're faced with the issue. So again, it's the same thing. We can get told and told and told something, and then one day we're going to see the repercussions of that, and that's going to come from an angry group of young people who are, angry.
But we've got the thing is that those logs have affected middle-class people.
Yeah, so now it matters.
So people who matter more.
Mm.
But if the problem can be restricted to lower class people, they have less political muscle and less chance to do things. So if the poor people are poor and suffering, we're not very aware.
We are aware now. I don't think we can sidetrack this one. That wood is everywhere. You cannot deny.
I know, but will probably be solved, I think.
Yes, exactly. I think. And you're right. Our one won't with a solo appearance until...
Well, there is a way to solve it, but we haven't got to it yet, that's all.
Well, until we are changed by our example, how we are individually take the responsibility of what we're doing and see it out. Because I tell you what, that's what we're leaving our women to do when we run out of these relationships and off to another one and produce small children.
We'll look at the time. I guess it comes back to a wider thing, and we should always be asking ourselves, why did I need to condemn that person? Why did I need that feeling of looking down on someone?
Mm.
Why do I do that?
Judgment. Because it justifies us. It makes us feel better.
Am I being judgmental? Do you ever have someone come to you as a counsellor and say, look, I'm being really judgmental and I don't want to be judgmental anymore? People don't usually see it as a problem, do they?
Funny, because that's something I would say to myself. Yeah.
But
I'm judging too much here, and what is it I'm missing? Because it is our natural way is to judge.
I don't think it's natural. I don't want to say it's natural.
Well,
I want to say
we have an opinion, and an opinion is a judgment.
It's common. It's very common to be judgmental, but I think it's a sign that we're trying not to look at something else.
Well, we don't communicate well. We cannot enter into someone else's opinion or thinking without backing up on it. Like, we can't just listen and validate their thought process without going, well, hang on a minute, what about this?
But see, people sometimes there'll be people who, if they can bear to listen to this conversation, will have got really angry.
Mm.
They're like really angry.
Mm.
And where's that coming from? Because they're really angry.
Injustice. Where is it coming from? And that's a good question to ask oneself, not for somebody else, but where's this coming from in me? Is this in my family? Is this in my lineage of my family line? Like, does it come through that? Is this come from a belief system that I've grown up under?
Is it fear of missing out? Like, if they raise their benefits, I'm missing out on stuff. Like, the economy doesn't
work
that. I have to say, there's no time to talk about that right now, but the economy just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, you're right.
If we did the thing of tripling the benefits that you suggested earlier, which we know is not going to happen,
I wish they would.
Who would benefit from that? First of all, the beneficiaries would be the people on the benefit, but then they're going to spend...
Kids would get fed.
They're going to spend all that money locally.
Yeah, that's right. They spend it locally. Exactly. It's going to go back into our economy.
It's a really important thing to remember. And I always joke that you have a responsibility to get as much money as you can on a benefit so that you can spend it in your local community.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because there are people who won't take benefits. They think it's immoral to take it.
Yeah.
And I think there's actually an argument that you have a responsibility to spend your money locally.
What a great angle.
I mean, I kind of say it in a joking way, but there's truth in it too.
There is truth
in it. Can you wrap us up nicely, Marie? We've been a bit down.
It is down. Because I knew this subject. It's a hard subject for me. I'm quite passionate about it because obviously I'd like to see us change the way that we respond to those, bringing up our children in our society that we are going to have to sit under as old people one day. Just remember that. So I'll just leave it with the same thing that I said. This little quote, the world is changed by your example, not by your opinion. Let's be an example. Let's try and turn a little bit inward. What is my example towards other people who are bringing up, who are solo parents? How am I treating them? How am I supporting them, behaving towards them? What's my thinking like, or what's my speaking out towards them like? Can I change something about that?
All right, Marie, thank you for coming in.
You're welcome.
Folks, that was our Lex Talk segment with Marie, local counsellor therapist, and it's the end of the show for the day. I will see you all again tomorrow morning.